14 years ago, I went from J.N. Burnett Secondary School to Richmond Secondary School for grade 11. In particular for their IB program. IB program is a program that's supposed to prepare you for university. And for those of you that have been in IB, you will know that in IB program, you're supposed to select a couple of courses that's in HL, that's what you call higher level. And then some of the courses is gonna be in SL, your standard level. And the HL, the higher level courses, are notoriously difficult. They are kind of like a few grades above your academic grade. And so I thought to myself when I was doing some course selection, I was a generally pretty hardworking student. I was okay. I was, you know, hitting B pluses, A minus for most of my courses. And I thought I was okay at math. I thought I was okay in science. So I made the grave mistake of selecting physics as my HL course. When I first got into physics class, I was met by my physics teacher. The physics teacher had a white beard. He had round gold frame glasses like this. He had like a flat cap going on, and honestly, he has a pretty big belly. I've heard from my classmates that this physics teacher is one of the smartest people. He is definitely the smartest person in this school, and if he wanted to, he could have taught university postgraduate level courses, but he taught in secondary school for family reasons. And so when I went to his first class, I quickly realized what they meant, because I had no idea what he was talking about. We started with forces and momentum and some FMA formula that I vaguely still remember now. And then we went to momentum, thermodynamics, relativity, special relativity, wave model, you know, things that exist and don't exist at the same time, magnetic fields, atom, quantum physics, all of which have left me completely confused. Now, even though I didn't have a great time in physics HL, there were a couple of things, two things in particular that is very memorable and I still think about fondly till this day. The first thing was that in physics 11, I saw a classmate that always sits halfway across the room. And for some odd reason, I thought this classmate knows what she's doing, knows what's going on. And so I did what any guy would do, is I Facebooked DM'd her. I slid into her DMs, essentially. I messaged her, "What do you know this physics stuff that's talking about? Like, because I have no idea." And she replied. And the rest is history, but that is a story for another sermon. I'm distracted. The second thing that is very memorable to me in this physics class was I went up to my professor one day after we had a class on, you know, radiation, cosmology, Big Bang, atom, the beginning of the world, all that kind of stuff. And I went up to my teacher and I wanted to ask him a question. I was afraid because I thought that he never really liked me. But I needed to ask him a question because he seemed to be very intelligent and very smart and very knowledgeable. So I went up to him and he kind of stared at me with his little, you know, glasses, and he looked at me and I asked him, "Mr., you know, so-and-so, I go to church. Do you believe in the creation of the universe?" You see, grade 11 me was not only struggling with atom physics and quantum physics and all that kind of stuff. I was struggling with the big questions in life. Because I started going to church and serve consistently at that time. And I, on the one hand, was serving in music teams, singing songs, talking about God's power, creation, you know, miracle, prayer, Jesus. On the other hand, I was in science class learning about, you know, Big Bang, evolution, monkeys, you know, the family tree and all that kind of stuff. And I kid you not, there was a period of time a little earlier in my junior high days, I was fascinated. Did you know that? Well, actually, I never figured out whether that was real or not, but I was fascinated. Apparently, there was a linen cloth that wrapped around Jesus when he died, and supposedly his face was imprinted onto the cloth. So I spent my summertime, entire summertime, Googling what Jesus actually looked like. And I want to be real vulnerable with you. I want to share a little story, a little secret that I never told anybody. During that time, I was so fascinated with these kind of questions. I was playing this game, Maple Story, MMORPG. I literally named my character ISJESUSREAR with a question mark on it. Super cringy. Being real vulnerable, sharing my darkest secrets with you. And as you can imagine, in that, you know, Korean-made game, online MMORPG, I had a lot of fascinating discussions with people I didn't even know. I had big questions when I was young. I don't know about you. Do you have big questions in life? Maybe you're on one side of the faith journey. You've been in church your whole life. You've been in church your whole life, coming up with your family. You're the supposed so-called second generation Christian. But you're an older now. You're grade 10, 11, grade 12, when I was, you know, asking my physics teacher questions. You're at that point where you start to see the world as it is, and you start to wonder and have questions. Honestly, you aren't really sure why you're coming to church, other than the fact that you've always came with your parents. And you're so glad that you moved to the evening, but lo and behold, they came with you in the evening. You aren't really sure for this whole time if God really exists or not. I mean, you served in the children team, you served in other teams, but then you've never heard from him directly. You definitely never seen him. And the Jesus that we talk about every single week that you've heard about, you know, you can memorize his story and recite all of it by heart. Because last time you checked the science Bible, dead things stay dead. Dead people stay dead. How do we know that Jesus is what we are singing about every single week? Maybe Christianity for you is more of a habit than a faith. Maybe it's more of a routine than a belief. That's the one side of the people. Or perhaps you're not there. You're on the other side. You came with a friend today. You came with a coworker today. You came with a family member today. This is one of the few times you've ever stepped foot in a church, and you've just witnessed like 100 people standing and singing for 15, 16 minutes to a person that's not here, where that's not existent. And people were praying miracles. That, you know what that is? In the subconsciousness of your mind, you think praying is an avoidance of responsibility. Because let's be honest, nobody ever helped you when you needed help. There was no miracles when you needed them. It's better to trust in your own two hands than to ask for something up there to help you. But you came with your friend today because she or he was kind enough, insisted that you have to be here. And so here you are. You have questions that you're not sure whether you should ask him or ask the person on stage. And you don't know whether they can answer or not. Regardless of why or how you got here, I'm so glad you're here. Because I think questions are good. Questions are great. Questions, especially for our faith, is important. If anything, if you have no questions, I would be concerned. No questions, or if you ignore your questions, I think that's the problem. And in many ways, if you have a question and you feel uneasy about unanswered questions, you know what that means? That means you care to a degree. And it's important that you care. And that's what we want to do in this series, to address, talk about some of these questions. And honestly, we can't promise to have all the answers. We are definitely not the experts. And definitely not going to be able to explain everything. But what we hope to do is take a journey and walk with you, and hopefully we'll see, you know, some of your answers, some of your questions answered. But even if not, I hope that you can find some friends in this community. We're pretty nice people. If I hang out afterwards with bubble tea, at least that's what you can find, hopefully. But if you do decide to come, and in the long run, our prayer and our hope is that you will find the answer to the questions that you have. So before I start today's question, I want to let you know the four questions that we're looking at for this whole series. So then you know, you can think to yourself, pre-decide whether you want to come back or not, okay? And for the other camp of people, I want you to mark some of those questions, because you surely have some friends and or coworkers in mind that you think, okay, this question is something that they have asked me before. I really want to bring them. So I want to give you a heads up so that you can mark the date and invite some of your friends over. The first week today, we're going to look at what's the proof of the existence of God. Second week, we're going to look at any scientific evidence for the creation of the universe. The third week, we're going to look at the Bible. How do we know the Bible is accurate and truthful and hasn't been, you know, messed around with? The fourth thing is, well, can we really believe that a dead guy came back to life? I encourage you, this is also a series that, you know, if you have a notebook, something to write with or some sort, Honestly, this series is probably going to be a one where you might find it to be helpful because things are going to get a little bit technical, okay? You might want to write some stuff down, quotations, citations, so that you can go back to fact check, look at it, ask GPT, Gemini, whatever you want to do with it. So let's begin. Session one, the first question we're going to ask is, well, how do we know that God exists? What is the proof of the existence of God? And I understand this premise, and hopefully we all understand this premise, because the God that we supposedly worship for 15 minutes is an invisible God. You've never seen him. I've never seen him. We say he's here, he's present, he's with us. How? Because it's not like he had a body, he had a statue, there's like a drawing, there's a painting, or anything that you can look at and tell for sure that is him. In fact, he doesn't seem to even have like sort of, you know, visible clues of his existence. You know, like if you go to like look at some horror movies and stuff like that, when supernatural things happen, you know, the lights flicker a little bit, the wind blow a little bit, the electricity go off. Like at least there are signs of ghosts. I haven't seen any of those. Have you? Have you seen any visible signs of this invisible God? How do you know that God exists? What's the proof? Especially when you can't see or touch him. Now, to answer this question, there's going to be a lot of ways that we can go about it. And I, for interest of time today, I'm just going to explore two of these. And in particular, I want to start with that second statement, especially when you can't see or touch him, that the God is invisible. Because yes, our God is invisible. God is not made up of matter. He does not exist in space and time as we know it. But because God is invisible doesn't mean he doesn't exist. Just because something is unseen doesn't mean it's not real. There's a book in the Bible called John. It's written by a guy called John, as you probably guess. In this book called John, there is a verse that describes this part about God, the nature of God. It says that God is spirit. And the surrounding context or the story of this verse was that there was a woman wondering about, well, which location is best to worship this so-called God? Is it in Jerusalem, or Samaria, or some other place? Because the sort of assumption is that, well, God must be at a physical location, right? God must be at a physical location, so we have to be at a physical location to worship this God. But then this verse and this teaching clarifies this to say that God is spirit, meaning that his nature, his mode of being, is non-physical. He is in a class on his own. He's different from ours. He doesn't have a material or a physical body. He's not limited to spatial dimensions. And honestly, that's where my poor mind breaks down from thinking about how a person, an entity, a thing can exist outside of the physical space. So perhaps an analogy might be helpful. And I want to give you a word of caution. An analogy is an analogy. It has its pitfalls and its shortcomings, but we'll make it anyway, just for us to understand. There are many things in this universe that's invisible. It cannot be felt, cannot be seen, cannot be touched, but nonetheless, it's very real. You've never seen gravity before. But it's a very real thing. You've never seen wind before. You've seen the effects of wind. You've never seen wind go by before. You've never seen things like radio waves, X-rays, infrared rays, you know, things that are outside of your human capacity for seeing, but they're very real. And the other thing that sometimes people like to say is like love. You've never seen love before. You've never seen like, you know, heart bubbles, you know, popping over, you know, two people. But it's a feeling that's real. You can't deny it. Just because you don't see it or you don't hear it doesn't mean it's not real. But God is not any of those things because God is not a force. God is not, you know, radio waves that if you expand your capacity for seeing, you can see him in the X-ray, you know. God is not a feeling that's inside your heart. But the point is, just because it's invisible doesn't mean it's not real. There are things in this world that's invisible yet very real. So the idea of an entity or even a divine entity being outside of our physical space is not too difficult to imagine the possibility of. Now, some would even go as far as to say that if you try to force a force a non-physical being to give you some physical proof, it's like measuring love with a ruler. You are using the wrong tool. So then the question is, well, what tool do we use? What is there a way to know? Is there a way to know the evidence of this invisible God? And there is. There is. Much like seeing, you know, the effects of wind, you can look at the effects of the invisible God, and you can see that to be a proof. So if you see, you know, trees moving outside the window, and you can infer that there is wind. So logically speaking, in the same way, if you see a thing, a cause or effect, an effect that's big enough, that's powerful enough, you can infer that is the proof of something much bigger. So that brings us to the second part of the answer that we're going to look at today is, well, what are some proofs of the existence of God? And again, there are many, many things that we can look at, but we'll just look at one. But I want to give you, sort of like a disclaimer. I am a musician. I'm not a scientist. I'm trying my very best to read out those theories and stuff. The theory that I know is music theory. The equation that I know and the numbers that I can count to is up to 4. So I'm trying my very best to present to you all of my findings, okay? But let's go with what we have so far. We're going to start to look at, there's this argument that much smarter people have not invented, they have thought about, called the Kalam cosmological argument. This is an argument that thinks about, that deals with the beginning of the universe. And we want to start with this because what better effect, what better proof of a great being than the universe itself? If you can look at the universe and find some way to think about that being an evidence, that is the greatest evidence that you can ever have. So this argument, this Kalam cosmological argument, has its ideas originate from philosophy, medieval philosophy, and later is studied and published by a philosopher and theologian, William Lane Craig. The argument has 3 premises. We're going to look at them one by one. Let's take a look at the first one. The argument, the first clause, assumes that whatever begins to exist has a cause. As in, things don't appear out of nothing. This is a metaphysical, you know, philosophical argument that's true of everything in this universe. Things that you see, things that you don't. If you look outside and there's a skyscraper, there's an apartment in downtown Vancouver, you're not going to wonder, it just appeared out of nowhere. If you go smaller, to the smallest thing in your body, a body cell, a blood cell, you're not going to think that it just popped out of nowhere. That's just not how things work. Nothing comes out of nothing. And people have tried to argue against this logic, but it's not really helpful. Because if you try to assume and just go against the grain and just say that, okay, this is false, if you just entertain the idea, this is false, what's going to happen? Things should start randomly coming into existence out of nothing. There should be a piano falling down just about now. There should be people popping up just right beside you, an elephant, whatever, stars and galaxies and universes just showing up out of nowhere. That should be happening all the time if that's false. But you and I know that's not what happens. Things begin to exist and there is a cause to them, so nothing comes out of nothing. That's the first premise of this argument. Whatever begins to exist must have a cause for its existence. The second clause of this argument says that the universe began to exist. Now, this is a pretty widely accepted statement at this point in history, but it was not always this way. For a long time in human history, people have thought that the universe was eternal, that it lasted, you know, before and forever. It's eternal, it doesn't change. It's something that we call the steady state theory. That's what people believed in. Until the 1930s, there was an astronomer called Edwin Hubble. He had a telescope, he looked at the universe, and he saw that it was expanding. Now, I'm going to get quite technical here. How did he know that it was expanding? Because he took the light that was coming into the telescope and he mapped it onto a spectrum. And what he found was all the light was shifted toward the red end of things. If you remember your science class, it's the longer side of the wavelength. This is a phenomenon that he called red shift. Now, if you have no idea what I just talked about, you will have seen or heard or experienced this phenomenon in some way. Imagine you're on the street and an ambulance is coming at you. What sound do you hear? You hear the siren. What pitch is the siren? It goes from a pretty low pitch, and as it gets closer to you, it gets really high and noisy and annoying, and then as it gets farther, it goes to a lower pitch again. Yeah? The farther something is, or the farther the ambulance was, the sound that you perceive, it's a longer sound, longer wavelength, lower sound. So in the same way, the light that's coming into the telescope from the universe was shifted toward the red side. And the important thing is the farther away things are, the longer the wavelength, or the more redshifted it was. Meaning that the universe is expanding, constantly expanding away, in fact, moving faster the farther away it is. That's called the Hubble's law. Now, why is this important? Why is the fact that the universe is expanding, why is that important? Because if you rewind time, it goes with logic to say that the universe was smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until you get to a point in the beginning of time that universe was a tiny, tiny, tiny little dot at a very small single instant. That is what we call now the Big Bang. The universe began to exist at a point called Big Bang. That's the beginning of the universe, which is when space and time and matter originated. And that is not something that we have to debate too much on, because there is proven later with the discovery of this thing called cosmic microwave background radiation, which for my brain and for my sake, I'm just going to skip through. But it's essentially leftover light explosions from the Big Bang that you still can detect today. That is the proof of the beginning of the Big Bang. And so what's so interesting about the Big Bang, I must mention this, what's interesting about the Big Bang, it's something that is so widely accepted as a scientific stance right now. And for the longest time, I thought Big Bang was the opponent of faith. But did you know the Big Bang was not originally a science idea, or I should say it did not come from a scientist. It came from this guy, a Belgian Catholic priest. I'm not going to bother to pronounce his name. I'm just going to like ruin his reputation. But it's a Catholic priest, a person of faith, originated the idea of Big Bang. And in fact, the smartest person in science, Einstein, he heard about this and he thought he was making stuff up. He didn't agree. Einstein didn't agree with Big Bang. Einstein tried to come up with a cosmological constant, you know, a universal constant, to put in his equation to try to force the universe to be constant. Until a little bit later, he realized that he was wrong. So for a long time, I thought Big Bang is the opponent of faith. You have Big Bang, so you don't need faith. But that's the opposite. Big Bang is a faith idea. So let's come back to the argument. The Kalam cosmological argument. We looked at two causes. The first thing is whatever begins to exist has a cause. That is all something we can agree on. And then the second thing is the universe began to exist. That's something that scientists all agree on. The universe began to exist. And so, therefore, the third point is that the universe must have a cause for its existence. The universe did not come from nothing. So the logical question that you must ask yourself is then, well, what is the cause of the universe? Some people will loop back around and will go back to say, well, the cause is Big Bang. But unfortunately, that's not an adequate answer, because Big Bang only tells you what happened at the tiny fraction of a millisecond after the Big Bang. It does not tell you how it happened. That's the limitation of Big Bang theory. Just because you name the event doesn't mean you can explain how it happened. So what's the cause? What caused the universe to exist? Let's think about this for a second. I'm going to go a little deeper and philosophical, so make sure you bring your brains. The cause of the universe must be above the attributes or beyond the attributes of the universe. For example, space is an attribute of the universe. The universe has space in it. That means that whatever created the universe must be before space, must be above or beyond space. He does not, or she does not, or it does not, the thing does not occupy space. You know what I mean? It's beyond space. Same analogy, same sort of same logical thinking. This thing that caused the universe is also above or beyond or not limited by time, because time is a product inside the universe. So the thing that made universe happen is outside of time or beyond time. Same thing with matter. Matter is something that existed as the universe was created. That means the thing that created the universe is immaterial. It's not made of matter. It's not made of things, because those things and matter and atoms and things was not there. So whatever the thing is that caused the universe to exist has to be above the attributes of the universe. So what are those attributes? That this thing is beyond time. It existed before time. It's eternal. And so if there is no time, that means that this thing is unchanging. That's the third point. It means that thing is unchanging, because if you don't have a succession of time, that thing cannot change. And also, for the sake of the argument, because there was no time, there was no beginning. It just happened. That thing, whatever the thing is, must be eternal. It must always be here. And I already talked about beyond space. The thing does not occupy, does not function in a spatial environment, and the thing is immaterial. So what is the cause of the universe? Is it a thing? Is it a formula? Energy? May the force be with you? Something, you know, magic? What is the thing that caused the universe to happen? If that wasn't deep enough, I'm going to go one step deeper, okay? So stick with me. There's this ancient philosopher by the name of Al-Ghazali. He made a contribution to this thought, and he says something in the lines of this. That this thing cannot be an impersonal force. It cannot be formulas. It cannot be forces. It cannot be just a set of conditions. Because get what we're saying. If this thing is before time, that means this thing has two conditions. It's either always here or never there. Because it cannot have changed. There was no time. It cannot have decided during this nothingness to bring something into being, because there was no time. But you know that the universe has a beginning. The universe has a beginning. So that means that this impersonal thing cannot be the cause, because there was no time for it to decide to bring something into being. It's either always there or never there. If it's always there, then the universe should always be there. If it's never there, then the universe should never be there. And so Al-Ghazali, he said that the thing that created the universe must be a personal agent with free will. This personal agent with free will is above time, above space, without a beginning. But because he or it or she has free will, he or it and she can choose to create something in an act that we now call the Big Bang. So who is this? Who is this timeless, spaceless, eternal, immaterial, but personal being that created this universe? If you think that this being can be any god from any religion, I would suggest you look into it. Go try to look into other religions. Because believe it or not, this set of criteria is quite difficult to match. It's very hard for deities that we know of to match this set of attributes. And if you ask me, if you ask the pastors in this church, I would say that the God of the Bible, the God of the Christian faith, is the one that most closely matches this description. This is what you know. This is what we read of in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, it says, God created the heavens and the earth. It tells of a God that created the universe from nothing, turning the world from darkness, from void, from chaos, from nothingness, to order, to beauty, to structure, and to life. Now, just before you turn away and say, Genesis is not scientific. The seven-day creation is not scientific. The order of the creation is wrong. What about dinosaurs? I know all of this. Genesis is not scientific. I should say it's not meant to be scientific. It's not a scientific report. It's not a scientific textbook. It's not meant to tell you exactly what the scientific process of creation is. You got scientists to do those. Genesis, the Bible, tells you the more important questions that science cannot answer, that Big Bang cannot answer. Who caused the universe? Why did he make the universe? Why did he make you? You, me. Why are we here? The Bible answers that kind of questions. And when you look into the Bible, you will realize that the God of the Bible is the one that most closely matches the attributes of the beginning of the universe. So let's recap. What is the proof of the existence of God given that he's invisible? Yes, there is proof, but just not in a way that you can see him directly. You can look at the things that he has done. Namely, if you look at the universe, and if you go by those arguments, if you believe that the universe has a beginning, it must have a cause. And the cause of the universe must be beyond the attributes of the universe. And the Christian God is the one, the only one, that matches those attributes. Now, understand that at this point in time, you might have many, 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 many more questions. And in fact, I hope that you have many more questions. Because you may wonder, well, how are you so sure that the Christian God is the one? Have you looked at all the other gods and pantheons and deities in this world? You have been saying that God is immaterial. So what about that Jesus guy that you guys sing about all the time? He died on a cross, didn't he? I'm glad that you have questions. It's important. Because if this God is real, that's a big deal, is it not? It's a life or death matter. If this God is real, it affects your life, but I think not only your life now, but supposedly eternity and your destiny. A lot is at stake, so please don't let your questions leave you. Don't forget about them. Don't ignore them. Hold on to your questions. It's important. I would love to answer you, but I'm going to spend way too long. So I suggest to you, I'm going to give you a couple of suggestions as you continue to think about those questions that we brought up today. I have a couple of suggestions for you. If you're new to this faith and you have a bunch of questions, you're new to this God, can I extend an invitation to you to come for at least the next 3 weeks? I don't know, and I can't promise you that all your questions can be answered, but I have faith that as you try to find the answers, that you can find the God of this universe. The second invitation that I have for you is if you're comfortable, if you're able, if you want to try, would you try to turn the question that you have into a prayer? It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It can be very simple. It can just be, God, whatever the thing that's up there, I don't understand this, I don't understand any of this, but I want to try to find out. Could you let me find you in some way? That could be your prayer. Would you try to turn that question into a prayer? That's my second suggestion to you. The third thing is, why don't you ask the friend that brought you? Why don't you ask your leaders, ask somebody, ask the pastors, why do you believe in what you believe in? Because I want to bet that in some ways, their story is a lot like yours, that they started from a faith, from a place that perhaps they don't believe, that they have their doubts, but they experience something that's beyond questions and answers. So I encourage you and I suggest to you those three things if that's your first time here today. The other two suggestions that I have, the next one is for some of the parents that's in here. If you're a parent in here, would you consider talking to your children, talking to your youth about these things? Don't assume, please don't assume that they go to a Christian school, they have been to church for a long time, that they don't have doubts about their faith. Please don't. And please don't shut them down. Why don't you talk to them about it? Explore it with them. Read up on it with them. Walk with them in this journey. I think their faith and also your faith will benefit from this. Lastly, for any believers, young students, college students, whatever, I'm sure there's at least one question that you have about this faith for a long time. It might be what we just talked about today. It might be science, evolution, monkeys. It might be evil and suffering. It might be sexuality, whatever that's going on in this world. The temptation is to ignore the question. The second temptation is to look it up on TikTok, neither of which is very helpful, honestly. Why don't you explore the question with somebody, with a trusted source, and see what our faith has to say about it? Because I think our faith makes sense. I think our faith can be tested, can be investigated. And honestly, doubt happens not when you have questions, it's when you ignore those questions. You have doubts. I have doubts not because we have questions, but because you ignore your questions. That's where your doubt comes from. So why don't you, maybe just for this month, go look into a question with a buddy of yours. And as I close here, I want to end with a story. We're going to go back to that book that we call John, right? John wrote the book. There's a story that we find in the book of John of two young men. Those two young men. These two young men, they were brought up in the faith. You know, they've learned everything about God, creating, you know, this universe, Genesis, and all that kind of stuff. And they also learned that God, in some way, is going to come into the earth, into this world, in a material being, in a physical being. And this person, this God in the flesh, was going to save the world. And these two young men were brought up in it. And this person is going to be called Jesus, this God in the flesh person. So I think they probably didn't understand what any of that meant. How could God be in the flesh, God be in a person, and God be here? But they were listening and hearing and learning about all these things from their teacher, who was also called John. So the teacher was talking, teaching them all these things. And then one day, these two men were listening to their teacher. One day, this Jesus guy walked by. Jesus walked by, and their teacher pointed out, hey, that's the one that I've been talking about to you the whole time. That is God in the flesh. That is Jesus, the Savior of the world. And these two young men, with all of their questions and their uncertainties, they haven't gotten all their faith figured out. They're still jobless. They don't know what to do with their life. They still have a bunch of questions. They followed this Jesus guy, wanting to find out more from him. And what's so interesting is Jesus, the supposedly God in the flesh, he stopped. God stopped for two men having a question for him. He didn't only stop, he turned around and he gave his full attention to these two young men. The God of the universe stopping for two men. And he asked them, what are you seeking? What are you looking for? What is it that you want? If this God was here today, he definitely saw you come in. He noticed you. And he asked you, what are you looking for? What are you seeking? What would you say to him? What questions do you have for him? What is it that you really desire in this life? Is it just simply an answer to a question? Is it an explanation for your life? A reason for your existence? Do you want some security for the future, a hope for tomorrow, a resolution of something that happened in the past, or some peace or comfort in difficulty? What is it that you're seeking? What would you say to him? It's interesting to note what the followers, the two men said. They didn't answer the question. They just asked, teacher, where are you going? Where are you staying? Perhaps they're hinting at something that maybe we can remember or pay attention to. they seem to know that the answer that they're looking for may not be a bunch of facts and information. They seem to be thinking that if I follow this guy, what I am seeking, I will find. So they're asking, where are you staying? Can we come with you? And the God of the universe said, come, you will see. You will see what you're looking for. The God of the universe didn't turn the followers away. He did not rebuke them for being dumb. He did not judge them for their questions or their doubts. He invited them. Come with me and you will see what you're seeking. Let's stand together. Let's pray. God, some of us are coming here with questions and doubts, and we don't even know whether you are real or not. We have been seeking and searching for our whole lives. Something deeper. Something to answer the questions and the doubts that we have. And God, we don't have a lot of faith. But in the Bible, it did say that you want us to find you, and you can actually be found. And you're actually instead, in fact, not far from each of us. God, our prayer tonight is may we see your work and feel your presence and come to know you more and more.